Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Weekly Conservative Talk. My name is Tracy.
And I'm just plain Bill.
And we're here to look at the last week's worth of, well, let's say, unconservative happenings.
Oh, yeah. There's lots of them.
The I want to get off to a rousing start.
Okay.
Given that we've got Holst and Mars and war going on. Did you hear that Obama has gotten all ballsy?
No.
He has.
What did, he reclaimed them from Michelle or what?
I don't know where he got them. Maybe Hillary showed up at the White House. I don't know. Anyways, he deployed two missile cruisers and a bunch of missile batteries to the Persian Gulf, ostensibly to protect our friends from a belligerent statement issued by Iran that on February 11th they will show the world.
Oh boy, I'm just waiting for that.
My only question is, what's ROI? ROE, sorry, not ROI.
Yeah, right, exactly.
What is Obama's rules of engagement should Iran actually shoot off a missile?
That's a really great question. I mean, I know what my answer is, but...
Fire!
Yeah, exactly. Hit that button, son.
Launch!
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Or he told them that all launch orders have to come from the White House.
Oh, man, I hope not.
Which is a really stupid thing to do, because, of course, by the time the White House even finds out that a launch has occurred, too late!
Yep. Exactly. It's way beyond the capabilities then.
And
I don't
of course,
care what
if,
they're finding.
Even if there was an extended period of time when it was possible, he took 3 months to put more troops into Afghanistan.
Yeah. That does not
Mr.
bode
President,
well.
Iran has launched a missile. What do you want to do? I'll take it under advisement. We're going out to dinner. Michelle wants to go see that new play in New York.
That's right. Oh, yeah, and Valentine's Day is coming up. Michelle and I need to go off someplace. Yeah.
So, let's see, the 11th is on what day? Next Thursday.
Yep.
Do I think that the world is coming to an end next Thursday?
Probably not.
No. So, Barack Obama is just posturing like a petulant little boy.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, you know, that would be a really good ploy on Iran's part to get him to react to an on-event and then to make their plans according to that reaction. That would be smart on their part.
Wouldn't it be interesting if on the 10th, I'm a dinner jacket, suggests to Obama that he'd like to sit down with him?
You know, I heard something about that today that he said that they're prepared to accept. Well, I'm not sure accept was the word. That's a little strong. They were prepared to discuss the requirement that Iran have its nuclear material enriched by the West.
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh. Sounds like buying more time to me, but oh well.
You know, Iran saying that is kind of like Obama saying, let me be clear.
Yeah, right. Some people say.
Let me be clear. In all honesty, there was a blog post I read that somebody has a really big problem with somebody that says, let me be honest. Does that mean that you weren't honest before that statement?
Probably.
And could you please tell me when honesty is going to end?
Yeah, exactly.
Raise your hand and say, okay, let me be honest. Only as long as my hand is up am I telling you the truth.
Yeah, right. Uh-huh. Okay.
Okay, so I actually wanted to get that, before getting into that, I actually wanted to get into the fact that it snowed here for the first time in about 3 weeks.
Oh, really?
Yes, we have come out of the frozen food locker, and we are now back into the refrigerated section. That means it can snow again. It's only snowed 2 inches. I mean, it's not a big deal. It's actually feeling like it's raining out there right now. It's a very, very fine mist. The reason I want to bring that up is because, of course, weather doesn't mean climate.
No, it doesn't.
And we all know that Punxsutawney Phil suggested that there was going to be 6 more weeks of winter.
Yes.
But what you don't know is we have Sun Prairie Jim here. And Sun Prairie Jim has been around since 1948.
Oh, really?
And Sun Prairie Jim, unlike Punxsutawney Phil, who's been right only 39% of the time, Sun Prairie Jim is right about 80% of the time.
Aha! And?
He said spring is coming early.
Oh. Ooh.
So I'm off.
Now that you have said that, what did General Beauregard have to say about all of that?
I have no idea.
That's the southern thing of all that.
Do you know what his response
was? Nope,
is?
I have no idea. None at all. I just happen to know he exists.
Well, I don't know.
Might have
to check. I'm not gonna compare an 80% winner to a 39% winner and say that
nope.
We need a tiebreaker.
Nope.
I don't think we need a tiebreaker in that situation.
Yeah, right.
I do want to let me see if it's been updated here recently. Because there is one election going on that we have all been kind of paying attention to. I haven't paid a great deal of attention to it, only because I haven't gotten into the particulars of it. And it's just it's a primary.
Yeah.
Primaries have, it's not so much that they don't have any meaning to me, as much as we have all been saying that we need to work at the primary level.
Yes.
And I was extremely disgusted by the fact that in the district race in Illinois, the conservative candidate was like having a really big fundraiser to hope over the weekend to get $50,000.
Yeah.
And I find that to be pretty slim. They haven't updated it in 13 minutes, but at this particular point, for the U.S. Senator from Illinois running in Barack Obama's previously held Senate seat, our favorite son, Pat Hughes, is getting his ass kicked.
Yep, he is.
So, with more, almost 60% of the precincts in. Pat Hughes has about 18% of the vote. Mark Kirk is sitting at about 50% of the vote. Nobody's over 20%. Patrick Hughes at 18. Everybody else is under 10.
Yep.
That's a done deal. They're going to call it eventually.
I think they already called it for Kirk. What they haven't called is the governorship.
Yeah, that one's kind of close.
Yeah,
Are you talking about on the GOP side?
Yeah, on the GOP
side. The conservative favorite son, Adam Andrzejewski, is at 15%. There are four of them between 15% and 20%, and there's one of them out in the lead by 23%. I think that one's going to go for a while before we get anywhere near calling that one.
So I just
wanted to bring everybody kind of up to date.
Actually,
that,
you know, that does bring up a really good point. And that's two things. One, the RNC, the NRSC, and the NSCC need to stay the hell out of state primaries. We will tell them who the standard bearer needs to be in our respective states. And the second lesson to learn from that is Tea Party folks and those people that identify with them, you need to coalesce around a candidate. You can't be spreading it out like that, because when you do that, all you do is you give that front runner, probably backed by the NRC, et cetera, a clear shot.
Which, of course, addresses the issue that you and I have been talking about for the better part of a year, the disorganized nature of the Tea Parties.
Yes.
And the simple fact of the matter is that the Tea Parties don't want to get organized.
No, absolutely not, and shouldn't, at least in my opinion.
I do agree. You know, my problem is, of course, there are six GOP candidates for, you know, in that race.
Yeah.
You know, frankly, the only people that are going to really be able to know clearly who should be there, you know, is the people in that district.
Yeah, absolutely. So
I don't know that any Tea Party group said this is who we want to pick. Maybe small groups or individuals did, but I don't know if there was any group that did. In any case, you know, we shall see. That's all I can say.
Exactly.
About that is we shall see. And of course, you know, in Illinois, for those of you that don't know, one of the state representatives, one of the U.S. representatives is Bobby Rush. And
yes.
If you don't know anything about Bobby Rush, know this. He makes the Reverend Wright look downright moderate.
Yes, he does.
And he was just put back into his district again by a huge margin. I'll wager money on.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt it's even on here. It's not. So, you know, people don't. You know, somebody said, "How can we as a society have put in 535, you know, of these people to lead us?" And I'm sitting like, you know, there's 60 million of us that think that the people that we have in there right now are just a cat's meow.
Oh, absolutely. Well, it's probably down from that, but yes, they did at the time.
So, you know, I'm not of the mindset that, you know, we don't get what we want. You know, we are getting exactly the kind of representatives in Congress that we want to be having there.
Mm-hmm.
Mark joins us again. Good evening, Mark.
Hi, Mark.
Tracy. This is Tracy.
This is me.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine.
Good. Thank you.
You get to start off 2 minutes to talk about, you get your choice. Barack Obama having balls, or pretending to, and I'm speaking of Iran, or the Pat Hughes race in Illinois. That's what we started out with.
The Obama doing what? On with Iran, what was the first one?
Obama sent two missile cruisers and a bunch of missile batteries into the Gulf, the Persian Gulf today.
Right.
To protect our friends from Iran's claim that on February 11th they will show the world.
Right. The 12th Imam.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's what's coming down the pike.
Yeah, he's a 12er, that lunatic. He believes in the 12 imams or something like that, and whatever. But yeah, on that, I think that it's a great idea. I mean, I guess it's the libertarian side of me that feels maybe we have to be less active in maybe occupying nations and overly involved in just being involved in the world. I would like to see the United States go more on a defensive footing.
Whoa, stop.
Yeah. I didn't finish my thought.
Yeah, but you went somewhere that I want to stop and retrace upon.
Sure.
America occupying other countries.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me what countries were occupying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Iraq.
Oops. Wait. Stop. Hold it.
Mm-hmm.
To be an occupier, one must be uninvited to be there.
Mm-hmm.
We are not uninvited to be there.
Well, if you open the dictionary, you may not see the same definition. I mean, occupation is basically to be there in the physical form, to be occupying space.
But in the real world of geopolitics, it is whether you are invited or not.
Well, I didn't even get into that part. I'm not.
Well, wait a second. Then Israel is not occupying Gaza.
I'm not saying. I didn't even really say my opinion. I didn't really give my opinion about the Iraq war. I'm basically just saying that the United States. All you asked me about the thing in the Persian Gulf, and all I'm saying is I would like to see the United States. We have to be on offense at times. If we are attacked, if there's absolute evidence of an attack, of course we have to go on offense. But I would like to see the United States doing more defensive things, like missile defense, like locking down our borders, you know?
That's all I'm saying. I can certainly understand that point of view, except for the 10 years between, it was about 10 years, between the end of the Gulf War and the invasion of Iraq. I mean, we were spending pretty much most of that time in a defensive posture.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't seem too good.
I know occupier might have been the wrong word. It's a dirty word. I didn't mean it in that fashion, like we're evil. I'm just saying that it's very expansive, you know, on our military, and it's very expensive, as we can see.
What is the purpose of our military? To stay at home?
Of course not. I mean, Afghanistan was absolutely justified after 9/11. We were attacked.
You don't think Iraq was justified?
I do, but I don't necessarily agree with the means upon which we fought it.
How would you think we should take a dictator with 700,000 man army out of power?
Easy.
Ask him politely.
No, go to Wikipedia and look up General Noriega in Panama.
We didn't ask him politely.
No, but we took him out, didn't we? Without deploying a military.
Yeah. I beg to differ. We had a whole shitload of military in Panama taking out Noriega.
Did
we dropped 7 companies, 8 battalions into Panama to take over the airports, you know, dump onto a whole bunch of his compounds, you know,
so what,
get around the canal. I mean, Noriega.
You know, look. This is not even it's not even ideological. It's a realist. It's realism. Realism says, look, if you look back at Rome, for example, empires dissolve because they expand. They overexpand. It's just realism. If we continue to deploy our military in the fashion that we have, realistically, it's just we're going to fall under our own weight, financially or overexpansively.
Mark?
Yeah, I guess I have to take issue with that. We are not expansive in that once we win – we go home. We don't stay there, other than by invitation of the country that is involved. Do we have people in Japan? Sure, we do. But
exactly.
We're there at their invitation.
And Korea.
Same thing with South Korea.
The Philippines.
Yeah, exactly. And my point in this is, in terms of the definition of expansive,
mm-hmm.
we are anything but that.
Right.
Okay.
And as a matter of fact, okay, based on your comments,
mm-hmm.
you know, expansive occupier, I would suggest that both words are very consistent with what I would think are your positions.
Well, I flip.
And both of those are consistent with a libertarian point of view.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
True.
Definitely. Yeah.
And so I, you know, rather than run away from them, go ahead and embrace them.
Yeah, I'm not running away. I mean, as a matter of fact, a year ago, somebody would have said, "You damn liberal for having MUs." No, I care more about our military than people who are willing to send them at the flip of a hat. You know, some people are like, "Oh, that person pissed me off. Let's send our military." You know. That should always be the very last, absolute very last option. I don't want dead soldiers coming back in body bags.
I disagree.
You know? Oh, you do want them coming back in body bags.
I disagree that military action should be the absolute last resort.
But you're talking about human lives, our military. They're people. They're real people, families, you know? We can't...
Yep. I understand. I got my nephew that's been in Iraq twice. He's going to Afghanistan here in the
mm-hmm.
next couple of weeks. So,
yeah.
Yeah, understand completely. No doubt about
yeah.
it. And I've had plenty of conversations with him. He's got a wonderful, nice, new little baby that's, you know, 7.5 months old. You know,
mm-hmm.
and frankly, I stand right behind him. No problems whatsoever. He's on his way back. And he wants to go back.
I guess the other point about that is we have, at least at this point, an all-volunteer military.
Yes.
Every one of those
Thank
people
you.
Knows and understands what it is that they're signing up for. So to say, oh, gosh, I don't want people coming back in body bags, well, of course not. Nobody wants them
no.
coming back in
no.
body bags. However,
right.
any time you go to war, that's what happens.
You know,
I mean,
you won't find
a bigger proponent of an absence of war than the military. But you will also not find in the military
mm-hmm.
anybody who says, well, practically anybody, who says no war at any cost.
I would never say that.
I know. I'm, you know, that's just,
yeah.
it's dumb.
That's delusional.
Absolutely.
But the thing is, people... You have, and I'm sure you guys do, you have to sometimes get out of your own thinking and your own ideology to look at certain things. Again, I never said Saddam Hussein was a good person. I know the atrocities he committed. The guy needed to be pulled out of there. I'm just saying I don't necessarily agree fully with the measures upon which we went to get him out.
Well,
so that's where I stand with that.
I would guess that the burden is on you to say, okay, what is the alternative method of getting him out?
It was a great, and I'm extremely thankful to our military. It was just a big cost, you know.
Well, sure.
Well, you know, I would make the argument that, you know, we tried to use all the other methods of dealing with Saddam Hussein from 1992 to 2002, and you know. None of them worked. Had we used the military option back in 92 to just finish the process,
right?
I think the end result would have been a lot less, you know, grief for us over the next 15 years.
But you mean to tell me that he couldn't have been he couldn't have been taken out covertly somehow?
Well, that's fine, except for then you're left with the two sons.
Right, and then you're left with a country in chaos, too, perhaps.
You know, let's assume that you take out him and the two sons. You still got the Ba'ath Party. You still got the Republican Guard. You still have a 700,000-man army that just, you know, let's be honest about it, you know, that took one look at our troops and, you know, for the most part, ran like scared little pussies.
Okay, let me ask you this question.
But
let me ask you this then.
But there was no way to know that was going to happen to begin with.
Right. Let me ask you this then. Where does it end? In other words, why aren't we taking out Ahmadinejad? Why aren't we doing the exact same thing we did in Iraq to Iran? Why aren't we doing that in North Korea? Why aren't we doing
that
in Venezuela?
Because the vast majority of the American people are gutless little cowards.
Gutless?
Yeah. They don't want to see body bags.
But is that gutless or is that just being rational, prudent?
No, it's not.
Okay.
You know, prudent means that you go in and do what's necessary to be done. Not try to minimize, you know, the amount of pain and suffering you have. You know,
but what are you, how are you defining what's...
Let me use an example. This is a pretty piss-poor example, but it's a reasonable example.
Mm-hmm.
Last Saturday, CJ decided that she was going to cook pancakes and bacon. Yay!
Mm-hmm.
Hoorah!
She's a little tentative around the stove. The reason she's tentative around the stove is she doesn't want to get burnt. Okay? And my problem with her and her tentativeness is she has a tendency to spill and drop and make messes because she's tentative. She doesn't want to get burnt. And I said, if you're going to be a cook, if you're going to be a regular maker of food, you're going to get burned. Just assume that that's going to happen and proceed from there. Okay?
Yep.
The American people have to understand that if you're going to solve problems, and some of those problems are going to take the military, people are going to die. Okay?
That's not the question here, though. That's not part of the equation.
It is what we're doing.
No, but I mean that's not part of my position. I mean, I just said all I said is I just said when
you you said I don't want to see body bags coming back.
No, I didn't mean like that. I'm saying I'm not. Look, nobody wants to see that. I'm just my question to you was if we have like 12 rogue dictators in this country, in this world, what do? Deploy our military to 12 different countries? Is that the answer?
Not all at the same time, no.
Right. So it goes back to what I said about being on the defensive. I'm not saying never offensive. It goes back to where I started. We have to be realistic. You have to have defense mechanisms. You have to be able to dwarf things. Because if we're forever sending our military all over the world, come on, just rational. It's just rational. You don't have infinite resources to do that.
Mark, have you ever taken a look at just a map of the Middle East?
Mm-hmm. I have one right in front of me.
And when you look at that, when you look at Iraq,
mm-hmm.
and you look at Afghanistan,
right.
and you look at Israel, what do you see in terms of the balance of power there?
See, I guess I'm more of a libertarian because my answer to you could be, why do I even care?
Because that's where most of your oil comes from.
No, it's true.
I mean, why do I need to care? Look, I'm not trying to be incompassionate. I'm just trying to make you think otherwise. Like, you know, prior to World War II, we weren't doing this. We were not doing this.
Oh, yeah, and look what that got us.
It's progressivism. It's progressivism. Again, it goes back to progressivism. Conservatives, through progressivism, feel they have to alter the world's views. It's a progressive. It's a conservative, progressive idealism that we have to make the world think like we do. We have the answers, and you must believe the way we believe. Come on.
Oh, I don't believe that for a minute.
Pushing democracy, pushing all this. Look, I love our country.
Mark, I do not believe that for a minute. When?
But it's been...
What? When has it been proven? It hasn't been. What
over and over we hear, how many presidents have we heard 30 years say, they have to believe democracy. Who cares what they believe in? You don't attack us, we don't attack you. You attack us, we rain hell on you. Simple as that.
Stop.
Okay. This
is fun. One. Okay. Mark, your positions are quite libertarian.
Okay.
That's perfectly fine in my point of view. I think it's acceptable point of view. I think it is a valid point of view. I tend to disagree with it for exactly the same reasons as I disagree with Ron Paul. I also disagree with our founding fathers in the idea that we should avoid international entanglements. I say that.
Ron Paul says that, which involves
knowing that
it.
I'm in disagreement with our founding fathers in this particular point of view, because our founding fathers did not understand the idea.
Mm-hmm.
Conceptually, they didn't understand the idea. Okay? That a war that exists halfway around the planet be visited upon us in 12 hours.
Right. They didn't have to. They had two oceans, you know, separating us from the world at the time.
Their foreign entanglement, their ideas of foreign entanglements means that, you know, we would send some ships and we wouldn't hear back from them for 6 months because it would take that long for them to get there, something to happen, and for the information to get back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And the idea that that would be a reasonable thing to be entangled in was just nonsense. Today, with the world, nothing in the world being more than 12 hours away, at any point, the idea that, you know, our ability to project, our ability to be aware of, our ability to be defensive anywhere on the planet, you know, in 24 hours notice, it's a necessary thing. It's just simply necessary.
Of course.
I'm not interested in squandering our military.
Right.
But I am not afraid to use our military when I think it's
right.
in our interest. And I think Afghanistan was our interest. I think Iraq was in our interest. I absolutely think that North Korea is in our interest, except, and this is an important consideration, South Korea doesn't.
Right.
What about Iran? Iran's more, possibly more volatile than North Korea. And you know what? Do you mind if I make a quick point?
We still have options open in Iran if President Obozo would use them.
Do you mind if I make a very quick point?
Sure.
Notice this. It's honestly true. Imagine. Let me just make two counterpoints. We have a federal government, right? And we all, I think, we all agree that they overmeddle in our lives, right? In our personal lives, our liberties. You know, telling us what we need to do to live. They're interventionists. If they're not intervening in our lives at home, they're intervening somewhere in the world. They're just incessant control freaks, it seems.
No, sorry, disagree.
And liberals hate our, you know that, liberals usually can't stand our military when they're intervening in our world, and conversely, conservatives can't stand our federal government when they're intervening in our lives.
Yeah.
It's true. But somehow they got this notion that they have to control everything, their own people or something in the world. It's our government just has this innate idea that they – I don't know. I just
– All right.
I don't know. Maybe I'm delusional.
Mark,
I don't know. Yeah.
Mark, I appreciate your joining us this evening.
Yep.
Okay.
And I appreciate the debate, and I think it's very useful. And it's a debate that needs to be continued to be held, especially over the next 8 to 10 months. Mark, I will catch you on the Twitterverse.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet.
I wanted to get into some other things before we run out of time tonight.
Yes.
I said we wanted to talk about some weather stuff. Let's talk about ClimateGate. Which the IPCC right now is falling faster than the temperature.
Hey, I wonder what the in-trade is on them continuing. I may have to look that up.
If it's anything less than 90 to 1, I want some of that.
Mm-hmm.
the most recent revelation. That a climbing magazine was a reference.
Yeah, right. For the Himalayan glaciers.
For the European glaciers.
Yeah.
For glaciers as a general rule in Europe. But yeah, and so I heard only something about it earlier on that there was a new study out on stratospheric humidity moisture content.
Uh huh.
that came out that suggested that there was a greater amount of variability than exists in the models. Duh.
Yeah, right.
My basic thing. I want to update. I don't know if I did this last time. Did I do this last time?
I don't know.
My prediction that that global warming will die, but would be pronounced dead in 2017.
Ooh.
Did I update that last week or the week before?
No, you updated a couple of others that you said, nope, I clearly missed the mark on that.
I think we should update to that to say that it dies in about, 2014. I don't think we're going to have to wait, 7 years for it to die. I think it's going to die a lot sooner than that. I think what we will have over the next 2 years is a shifting, where climate change deniers were considered to be the equivalent of Holocaust deniers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think the percentages are going to flip so much that, unfortunately, the climate non-warming promoters will call the deniers the deniers.
yeah, right. A little convoluted, but yes, yes.
Yeah, I think so many people are going to be on there. I was reading the story. Did you read the story or see the story on the coral down in the Florida Keys?
I did not see that one.
Significant coral die-off going down in the Florida Keys because of the cold.
Ah. Didn't see about the coral, did hear about the fish.
Yeah, lots of problems with die-off of the fish population down there also.
Yep.
It appears that unlike global warming death of coral, which has a tendency to take some time for the bleaching process to work through, the cold just went straight from bleaching to death.
Oops.
There was no intermediate step. It just, today it was alive, tomorrow it was dead.
Hmm.
And
hey, you know what would cure that?
Some global warming?
No.
What?
Nuke plants. They put out a lot of warm water.
That's true.
They do.
Yeah. But you know what?
What?
I who am a big supporter of nuclear power plants.
Yeah.
Think that there are two places where you shouldn't have them.
Let me guess. One of them's on the coast.
Well, specifically the Florida coast.
Oh, okay. Why specifically the Florida coast? Oh, hurricanes and...
Cat 5 hurricanes.
Yeah, well...
They have a tendency to roll over there on a pretty regular basis.
Yeah, they do.
And near, major fault lines.
Hmm.
Silly me that they've only got a couple of them in California.
Yeah, well...
So... Now, those are two places that I'm not real big fans of nuclear power plants. Those are two places. But yeah, you're right. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk. We talked about this, what Obama would say the next day, last week, about the State of the Union address.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, it is clear now that Obama is either there's three possibilities. Okay. Obama reads The Onion, but nobody has told him that it was actually a joke paper.
Uh-huh. Yes, that could be.
He actually lives in a virtual world, but, comes out to speak, in the real world.
Hmm.
Right now it's all, VR inside the White House.
Yeah, I see.
Or... he is the most clueless, incompetent, unbelievably uneducated, disconnected from reality president we have ever had in our history.
I think I'll vote for C. And incidentally, on a related note, in Chicago, there is a guy that, actually a husband and wife team, that keeps a mock-up of the White House in miniature.
Yeah.
And and it is faithful in its details. And on the walls of the current White House, in their mock-up, are pictures of the one. The one getting in the Air Force One, the one shaking somebody's hand or bowing, whichever.
we'll come back to that.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought that was pretty interesting as kind of an insight into this president, that he feels like he has to adorn the White House walls with his picture.
The man is a narcissist, we know that.
Yes, he is.
Pat Hughes has officially lost.
Ah, has he? Okay.
Yes, they have called it for Kirk.
Yep.
He only lost by 200,000 out of 400,000 votes. So 19% to 57%.
Oh, man.
That's a pretty serious ass-kicking. They still haven't called the governor's race yet. Just to update those that are listening. All right. I was going to spend a whole lot of time on this. We got distracted.
Yeah, we did.
it is pretty clear that, he's looking at a whole different set of numbers than are being, given to the rest of us.
Oh, in terms of the economy?
In terms of the economy.
Yeah.
And his perception of the world is just so different than mine, ours, so many other people.
Yep.
I've seen it, and I don't mean to pick on Victoria all the time, but there are times when I sit there and I look at her and I go, "How can you see that?
Yeah, right.
It's not even rational."
Yeah, right.
and Barack Obama just looks at it and goes, on January 20th I became president, and this whole world opened up before me, and it was a mess. And I'm thinking, what were you doing for the 2 years before that?
Yeah, when you were running for the office.
When you were supposed to be a senator and voting for this shit.
Well, that's true also.
So, I just find it to be strikingly disconnected from reality. He's there. And if there was nothing else about it, is when he went to the GOP caucus meeting. Was it in Baltimore, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, somewhere in that general area?
What, the GOP?
Yeah.
I thought they were over in Hawaii.
No, they were in Hawaii. It wasn't that.
No?
Far. No, it was somewhere in the Near East. Anyway, okay. He shows up with the GOP caucus thing, and somebody said, did you even look at Republican proposals for health care? And he said, yeah, I dismissed them. Yeah, I looked at them and I dismissed them. I dismissed them.
Oh, Lord.
And all I could think about was, I looked at Obama's health care proposal and I dismissed it.
Yeah, exactly.
I looked at the House plan and I dismissed it.
Yeah.
I looked at the Senate plan and I dismissed it.
Yeah.
Oh, and, Obama won't even talk to us about it.
Exactly.
you sit there and kind of go, okay.
Yeah.
I've had this conversation. I just got so pissed off at people over the weekend, and who sit there and say, this is all the GOP's fault. And I'm sitting there going, how is it the GOP's fault? How the hell is it the GOP's fault that health care didn't get passed? Well, you were obstructionist. How would we be an obstructionist? We didn't have the votes.
Yeah,
but you
really
could have had at least one person vote. Why? We think it's a piece of shit. Why
yeah, really?
Vote for it?
And you don't need us.
And you don't need us. You got the House. You got the Senate. We can't stop you. If you want it, do it. Well, you're being obstructionist.
Yeah.
What? No. We're a stoplight that's flashing yellow. It's not red. It's not solid red. It's not flashing red. It's just flashing yellow. Hi, we're the GOP in the Senate, and we're flashing yellow.
Yeah.
Be careful.
Yep.
He can't stop you. Just be careful.
Yep. Exactly.
And I'm really going, that's it. Okay? And I said this online. I'm going to say it right here. Okay? You know, the GOP is, and specifically the Tea Party and conservative movement, has been obstructionist this whole year. Okay? We've stopped everything that Barack Obama wanted to do. In that regard, as far as I'm concerned, anything that comes out of the Obama White House at this particular point, my first and only reaction is going to be no.
Yeah. Oh.
If he wants, if he wants to pass a resolution that the 4th of July is a really important holiday, no. Yeah.
No.
If he wants to say today is Tuesday, no.
No.
I'm just going to say no. We're going to get blamed for it, for being obstructionist. We may as well just simply be obstructionist.
Exactly.
Screw it. You want to see what obstructionist is? Fine. Okay? Yeah. Don't even get the time of day from us.
Okay. Yeah.
That's as far as I'm concerned. You know, it has reached a point where the left is absolutely, has joined Obama in this disconnect from reality that just doesn't make any sense.
I know. And the shame of it is, if they had started down an actual jobs bill, and if they had addressed economic concerns, truly addressed them now, not handouts to the Dems constituencies and that kind of stuff, but truly addressed them, they would have some signature legislation passed. If they had tried, at least attempted, some kind of reaching across the aisle, they would have gotten at least what they consider to be bipartisanship, and they would have gotten their health care plan. Wouldn't have been all theirs, but it would have been some.
Right. They would have gotten the three horsemen of the apocalypse for the GOP.
Yep.
You know, and probably a few others. If they had even thrown a bone to them.
Exactly.
Bone.
Yeah, but, I know.
You know, it's right. Just, you know.
I think they got mesmerized by that 60th vote. And then they found that they could not reconcile their own party.
You know, I'm sorry, but that has nothing to do with the GOP.
Exactly.
Nothing to do with the GOP.
Yeah, that's right.
And so, frankly, myself, I'm not interested at this particular point in time with Barack Obama asking anything. And I think while that meeting with the GOP was illustrative, it was by no means helpful or useful.
Yep.
You know,
I agree.
And to be perfectly honest, we had really good evidence of that yesterday with the Obama budget.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I'm just going to call Barack double D Obama.
Yeah.
Double down, dude.
Absolutely. Oh, man.
there's nothing in there that says, you know, I'm interested in bipartisanship. I'm interested in reaching across the aisle. This is, fuck you. I'm going to do whatever I damn well want.
Yep. Absolutely. I mean,
and
as far as I'm concerned,
given that particular point of view, you know, I'm willing to be obstructionist. And right, somebody else said it. Was it Rush that said it today? That the GOP should just come out on the speakers tomorrow and say, you know, his budget's dead on arrival. It's just, we're just not going to be interested in there. Of course, it's not dead on arrival because they got 59 votes, and it's a budget bill.
That's true.
They don't even need 60 votes on a budget bill.
Yeah, they only need 50. One.
They only need 50. They can do it on reconciliation. A budget bill doesn't require us at all. So, again, they're in a position, as far as his budget is concerned, to pass it without a single Republican vote.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, I would think that the GOP should say, we can't stop you, you know, fine, do it yourself.
Yeah, flashing yellow lights here, but we can't stop you.
You know, but Barack Obama doesn't like doing things by himself.
No, he doesn't. He does not want to take responsibility.
Right, he can be held accountable for it.
Exactly.
Boy, he runs away from accountability almost as fast as he runs away from Michelle. I mean, never mind.
Nah, never mind. But you're right, he does.
He does run away. he runs away from accountability, and there's no doubt he's doing so again.
I wonder if he was bullied as a child.
Huh?
I wonder if he was bullied as a child.
As far as the budget is concerned, I'm really, really getting to the point where we need to hit the reset button.
Yeah.
Okay, where we have to implement Tracy's federal government crash reset.
God, that'd be nice.
I would like about $2,500 from somebody so I can hire somebody for about 2 months to actually do the number crunching that needs to be done, to do Tracy's budget crunch reset, federal government reset thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I need. I think about $2,500, about 2 months to pay someone to do some number crunching. I can direct them how to do it, exactly what needs to be done. But the more I think about it, the more I'm liking the whole idea of, the federal government reset. It's going to be necessary.
Absolutely.
If he puts out 3 more budgets like this and they get passed basically the way he's sending them to be done, we're going to have no choice but to do it.
I think we take the House in 2010.
Oh, with him double downing, we may get 100. We might get 100 seats.
Oh yeah, we really could. In fact, I read an analysis today. I'm not real sure that I agree with it, but I read an analysis today that said not only the House but the Senate.
I suggested 9 votes, didn't I?
Yeah,
9 seats
you did.
In the Senate.
Yep.
I did suggest 9 seats in the Senate.
Yep.
And
I'm
you thought I was crazy. Go ahead. You can say it. You can say it.
I don't think it's crazy. I'm just, man, everything has got to fall just right. And I
he doubled down.
Well, he did do that. he did do that.
All we need to do is have him continue to do that for about 3 more months.
Yeah.
If he keeps it going until like May or June,
if
he gets obstinate about it, if this budget process gets really bloody, and he gets obstinate about it, for over about the next 3 months, oh man, it's going to be a Democratic bloodbath of unprecedented proportions.
Yeah, that is going to be ugly. I mean, ugly.
Ugly.
Ugly for them. I'm not so ugly for the rest of us.
It's going to be as ugly as I am.
Yeah, and me. Jesus.
Hold on a second. Give it to me, Doug.
What do you got?
Doug. All right, now, I warned you.
Yes, you did.
This was coming.
You warned me.
We have only 7 minutes, so you're lucky, because I was going to do about 30 minutes on this.
Hey, I'm game.
Okay.
Yeah.
Someone set me upon this concept of the 5,000-year leap. Have you heard it?
I have. I haven't heard all of it yet, but I've heard it.
Okay. The 5,000-year in 1 minute. The 5,000-year leap is predicated on the founding principles of our country creating such a significant leap for society as a whole, humanity as a whole, as to constitute a once-in-a-5,000-year event. Now,
okay.
I don't necessarily disagree with that,
mm-hmm.
actually.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I've said to many people, I've said it online, I've said it in the American Third Party formation process, the phrase from the Declaration of Independence, we hold these truths to be self-evident. In fact, we're not.
No, they weren't. Not at the time.
Not at the time. So, our looking back at it from this point makes it look like, oh, well, duh. It wasn't a duh back then.
Yeah, no, it wasn't.
But the premise of this leap, and the premise that they apply to the founding principles, is that it was the first time in human history that a constitution, that a country was formed upon the principles of natural law.
Yes.
Okay. Now, I got a few problems with it.
Okay.
Okay. Because I really need to get a really clear definition of what somebody means by natural law.
Right, yeah.
So I'll ask you to, in a shorthand version, to give me what you think natural law means. Not the definition, not the fancy definition, what you personally think natural law means.
Natural law is that law that, whether we recognize it at the time or not, whether it is spoken contemporaneously beforehand or post-societally, is an expression of law that goes beyond our understanding at the time.
Hmm. So you're suggesting that natural law exists whether we perceive it or not?
Yes. And okay. and let me, you know, let me expand on that just really briefly, because I know we're short of time. You can go back to Aristotle, Socrates, Aquinas. You can go back to all of the heavy-duty thinkers, and you can follow that thought process up to that point in time when the Founding Fathers said, we believe these truths to be self-evident, because they read them, and then they applied them to their world and said, it's as plain as the nose on your face.
I think they go a little bit farther than that.
Okay.
By they, I mean those that propose that, because they use three different phrases, and they use them in conjunction, seldom by themselves, almost always together. Natural law, nature's law, God's nature. Nature's God. So natural law, nature's law, nature's God.
Okay.
Now, you know my agnosticism is going to have, raise a little bit of the hackles going there.
Sure.
When I hear God, especially when it's put into capital letters at the end of a phrase, because I'm going to want to know what that means. And it appears to mean that that actions taken out of a foundational support in nature are irrational. So that the only rational laws are those that find support in natural law. Now, I have a problem with that, because there's a whole lot of societal laws that are not going to have any basis in natural law. An example would be setting the age of majority at 18, or 21, or 14, or some number.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Nature, has an entirely different concept of what the age of maturity is.
Okay.
Than what we do as humans.
Well, that could be because we poorly understand it, but yeah, okay, go ahead.
Maybe I poorly understand the concept of natural in the context of law.
Well, let me use your example, that age of maturity. That law is in effect, and it varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. But it is in effect because we have no way of knowing or judging when someone is mature enough to exercise their rights as an adult.
But wouldn't you suggest that no one specific age is going to be appropriate for everybody?
Absolutely.
All right, we'll stop there. We're going to continue this in the green room.
Cool.
Hey, hello.
Tune in,
shout
folks.
We've got 30 seconds.
Mama Gurkha, Just Me Pammy, Arkansas Traveler, if you're still back in the States, thanks for listening.
All right. It's been an interesting week. It's going to be interesting for the rest of this coming week. And, of course, we'll see if, you know, Iran's going to start World War III next week.
Exactly.
We'll talk about it next week. Bill, have a good week. We'll talk to you in the green room.
Yep.
Everyone else, you know, you'll have to listen up later.
Yeah,
bye.
Yeah. Bye.
Green room time. All right.
Okay.
So, maybe it is my, maybe I am failing to understand what they mean by natural. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But my argument would be that there's a whole shitload of perfectly reasonable laws that have no foundation in natural law, nor would there be any foundation in natural law, but that wouldn't make them any less rational or useful.
Hmm.
Besides age of maturity, I have 7 others.
Cool.
That
brought
I
them out.
Came off to the top. I actually, the person that asked me to look into something, then asked me my issues with their another group's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Point of view pretty solidly into natural law. Can you tell me the natural law that supports 18 as the age of maturity, voting rights, immigration, sovereign territory, copyrights or patents, elections by the majority, the transportability or transferability of contracts, natural law that supports bankruptcy. And then I threw one in just to be a little bit of a snot. The natural law that supports slavery. I put that one in as a snot because nature has no problem with slavery.
Nope.
None whatsoever.
Not a bit.
Not in the least. So that one was kind of, you know, snot-oriented because, you know, that's the one place of all those things. That's the one place where nature actually tends to be pretty supportive. So that's my problem with the concept of natural law. Now, I understand if we're going to – I think this is where they went to, but I think they've taken it so far that it has become irrational. Okay, you and I agree that rights are inherent.
Yes.
Okay. That they exist by the simple fact that we exist.
Yes.
That they require no society. As a matter of fact, they require no other person. The single
yes.
soul individual. Had Adam been born, actually, had Adam been created in truth and in existence, all of the rights of humanity existed at the moment of his creation.
Yep.
Okay.
He may not have known about them. He may not have exercised them, but they were there.
But they were there.
Yeah.
In the sense that those rights are inherent in our existence, I would call them natural. Okay. Now, here's the problem. Natural law suggests that those things are inviolable. They exist in each iteration of humanity. Would you agree with that, or am I
no,
being
a little too... I think you're reaching there. The exercise of them...
No, not the exercise of them. Well, yes, I am. Yes, that's correct. I am thinking the exercise of them.
Yeah, right. So the exercise of them... would in fact be from generation to generation. I mean, Ronald Reagan said it very well when he said that we do not pass freedom on in our DNA. That has to be earned every generation.
Right.
That's
and,
true.
And
so the right may exist, we may not exercise it. Okay.
Okay. But I would suggest that that the only way in a society, And I'm not talking about even a government-run society. I'm talking about
right. Just
in
society.
A natural society, sans government.
Right.
Okay? That your rights do not exist in a vacuum when there's a second person around.
That's true.
That I, let's suggest that it's you and I on that deserted island,
mm-hmm.
that you and I have to acknowledge, whether it's implicitly or explicitly, that, in fact, the other has some rights.
Yes.
If I happen to have...
Well, no, I'm sorry. No, that is not right.
The free exercise thereof.
No, that still isn't right. Still isn't right.
You don't
right.
think that the free exercise thereof has to be dependent upon my willingness to allow you to do so?
You have presupposed with that comment. And the presupposition is this, that there is not an imbalance of power.
Okay.
I.e., if that society is to exist, and if those two people, you and I, on a deserted island someplace, are going to recognize each other's rights, it takes both of us to do that.
Correct.
If there is an imbalance of power, then all bets are off.
Like I have a knife, a gun, and a grenade.
Yeah. And I've got a 2-foot-long stick, you know.
Then you need me to acknowledge your rights.
Exactly.
Otherwise, your rights are suspect with regard to me.
Yep. They still exist.
They still
exist.
But
I may not be able to exercise them.
Right, the free exercise there. Okay.
Yep.
That's kind of the point that I was going at, is that, and it's one of the arguments that, of course, most people make as far as society is concerned as a whole,
mm-hmm.
that our rights, the free exercise of our rights, require all the participants of society to acknowledge that each other member has an equivalent level of rights.
Well, at least the majority of them, yeah.
At least the majority of them. That some framework has to be developed so that the free exercise of rights across the society can occur with minimal fuss.
Yes.
Minimal of interference, which brings us to the idea that some level of government's there. And one of the questions I asked of this person was, what is the right and just limitation of government? Now, the argument in natural law is that the right and just limitation of government is the protection of others' rights. I think that that's horrifyingly dangerous to think that way.
Well, yeah, because that presupposes that there is some kind of a benevolent passing on of those rights of some sort.
Well, one of the things that I had read was the idea that tolerance, okay, which is
mm-hmm.
what this is,
mm-hmm.
it's a tolerance for somebody else's free exercise of their rights.
Mm-hmm.
Tolerance is a granting of a right. I never thought about it in that particular way, but think about it. When you tolerate somebody else's free expression, you're saying, okay, you can do that. What you're saying is, I'm giving you permission. Now, I don't necessarily agree that that's an explicit point of view, but it certainly is an implicit one. Are we saying, when we're saying, okay, we're going to tolerate, you know, multiple religions in here, are we saying, yeah, you can practice your religion because I'm letting you? Now, their argument was that tolerance can be offensive if presented explicitly that way. I agree explicitly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know so much about implicitly. You know, if you explicitly say to somebody, you know, yes, you can practice your religion, we let you, I think that's offensive in our society.
All societies that I'm aware of, and I'm certainly not aware of all societies, but all of them that I am aware of have mores.
And
yes,
they're not always compatible.
And yes, you can cross those mores, but you do that at your own peril, not in being able to cross them, but in being ostracized or shunned.
Well, my argument has been that, you know, why is our moral system, you know, as far as our system of government is concerned, why is our moral system any more, you know, acceptable as a foundation for laws than, say, Islam? Now, you and I both know that basically Islam is incompatible with our system of government, our system of beliefs, our foundational principles. Islam is fundamentally at odds with. But it is a moral system that our system says we have to acknowledge.
I
mean, let's face it. If we had, if let's say all of Detroit became Muslim, and they decided for the city of Detroit that state issues for the city of Detroit would be ruled by Sharia law, Sharia law. For all practical purposes, we have to sit back and go, okay. Because for that local community, you know, that community's system of moral guidelines is going to establish for that community a system of laws that, you know, for that community are acceptable.
I'm thinking, though, that that would only pertain to those people who participate in that belief system. I mean, for instance, I am not a believer in Sharia law.
That's true.
So,
but
so if I travel from my home here in Hayfork to Detroit, are you suggesting that I should all of a sudden be subjected to Sharia law?
Sure, if you're in Detroit.
No, I don't think so.
Sure.
No.
Yeah, sure.
And I'll take along my Garand and prove it.
Yeah, sure. I do believe it. As a matter of fact, I know that if the speed limit in Madison, Wisconsin is 45, then when I get to Detroit and the sign says 25, I can't go, well, you know, in my community it's 45.
I think you're mixing up apples and oranges there.
Okay, let's take another example.
Okay.
In Hayfork, you can carry your gun. You got a permit.
Yeah.
In Detroit, there is no open carry or concealed carry permits allowed and no right to carry a gun. If you go walking in
Detroit... Subject to the Supreme Court review, yes.
Subject to the... should they change and decide to do that.
Yeah.
But right now, if you were to walk into Detroit... carrying it on your shoulder or, in fact, carrying it in your hip belt, you know, you're subject to arrest. Okay?
But none of those, none of your examples so far have pointed out a difference between Sharia law and our normal civil law or criminal
law. Okay. In Detroit, women cannot be headdressless.
Ah. Okay. There's an example of Sharia law that ought not to apply to someone who does not participate in that belief system.
But in Detroit, that's the law.
Which would promptly be overruled, but yeah, okay.
Until it's overruled, me appearing without a headdress in Detroit could get me arrested.
Yeah. But now we start talking about, do you enforce your rights or not?
Which rights?
Your right to walk around with your head bare.
In Detroit, they've decided that that's not a right.
And in the rest of the country, and I suspect that the Supreme Court would agree, or actually it would probably be a an appellate court, lower level, would say, you know, guys, we're really sorry, but no, you really can't enforce that.
Can't go to Supreme Court. It's a local rule.
Sure it could.
No, it can't.
Tracy, come on.
Wait a minute. I'm making an argument that a lot of other people are...
I mean, I know that you play an attorney on television.
My argument is that the Supreme Court is going to make a decision whether it can reach down into a state and say you cannot deprive people of basic rights, even if everybody in your community says, yes, we can.
Yeah.
And we have already, many of us on the conservative movement have already said, don't you dare, federal government, reach down into our states and tell us what we can and can't do.
Hmm.
Federal government,
if I've got
a gun manufacturing facility, and I manufacture the gun, and I sell it in my state, and it doesn't leave my state, the states are telling the federal government, go stick it up your ass.
Yep. That's true. They are. So,
at the same token,
here's my question. Gee, did Detroit get in back of that 10th Amendment movement?
Doesn't make any difference. If we assume that the state has a 10th Amendment right, whether it actually, you know, decides it's going to be interested in implementing it or not, it has the right.
Mm-hmm.
It may decide to not freely exercise that right, but it's got it. You know,
okay.
this is my problem, and this is my problem with you know.
Well, but it's going to be your problem with any form of government.
It's going to be my problem with any form of government that's built upon the premise that a system of moral rules as a foundation for laws is an acceptable point of view. Because morals change or are different from community to community.
Well, but it's a moral view that you don't run around killing other people. That's a moral view.
Are you telling me
you got a problem with that?
I'm amoral, so I don't have any problem with killing somebody on its face. I have a problem with killing somebody because I think I've violated their rights. I don't have
any
moral problem with killing somebody. I don't, people are just going to sit there and go, well, you don't really think like that. No. You know, my nephew goes into Iraq or Afghanistan. You know, he sees somebody pointing a gun at him. I'm hoping he pulls the trigger.
And I'm hoping
he's got an automatic weapon with a lot bigger caliber when he does it.
Yeah, right.
Okay? And I want him to be able to come back here and look at me straight in the eyes and goes, yeah, what did you, and I ask him, what did you feel when you killed that person? He said, recoil.
Yeah.
That's what I want him to feel. Okay? That's the point of view. That's my particular point of view. Okay, in those situations where there is, you know, my life, that other person's life, I have no moral problem whatsoever. Zero. Okay. In that regard, I have no moral situation. And as far as I'm concerned, that person gave up their right to life the second they decided to point a gun at me.
So get a little more nebulous.
I don't have to get nebulous at all.
You threaten me,
and I have absolutely no problem or qualms.
I understand that, but for purposes of the argument, you need to get a little bit more nebulous with in terms of the scenario that you paint in order to come to a valid conclusion. What about the person who kills somebody because he thinks they are going to kill somebody else?
My position is that only the right holder has the right to defend those rights. here, let's be clear about it so that we're there. Yeah. I believe I have the right to kill somebody that's pointing a gun at CJ.
Okay.
Okay. And the answer is, yeah.
Hmm. So that was the third. That was a third party holding a gun on somebody, and you intervened.
Right. My life was not threatened in that scenario.
So why wouldn't that extend to somebody beyond CJ? Living person.
I see somebody holding a gun at one of the neighbors. And I step out of my house and pop them in the side of the head without them realizing I was even there.
Mm-hmm.
Not a family member, not even a relation, just a neighbor.
What happens if he's only got a knife? You are still trying to do imminent deadly danger.
No, I don't.
I'm trying to move you beyond that.
No, but see, your problem is you want to see what the limit of my rights are.
No, what I'm wanting you to do is clarify what you are saying. So far, what you have said is imminent deadly danger. I can plug anybody.
Absolutely anybody.
Okay. What if it's not imminent deadly danger?
To me.
No, to anybody.
To anybody?
To express the fundamental principle, it has to be anybody, not just you.
Yes, I believe anybody has the right to do so.
Even if it's not imminent.
Even if it's not imminent.
Okay. So the
do I believe that there are consequences to that action? Absolutely.
Hmm.
That's the point where people fail to understand my amoral point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I have the right to just walk up to somebody and say, "I don't like you." Boom,
mm-hmm.
dead. Okay,
mm-hmm.
As far as I'm concerned, I have that absolute right to do that. You know, people say you don't have a right to murder. Yeah, I do. I can walk up to anybody and just kill them. I have the means, I have the knowledge, I have the capacity, I have the ability, I have the desire. I act. That's it. There's the rights. Okay? Now,
I will take fundamental issue with that, but go ahead.
Now, here's where everyone else is really safe when it comes to me. Okay? I believe that every other single person walking around has exactly the same right. That I am as in much jeopardy myself as others are for me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, knowing that every other single human being out there could just decide that they don't like Tracy. Maybe it's not even a matter of disliking Tracy. I just happen to be there and they burned their lip on their coffee.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay? And they just took out the gun and just said, "Whoever's nearby, you're dead because, you know, I burnt my lip." Okay?
Yeah.
Because if every other person out there is like that, then what I'm going to want, okay, is some way to deter that other person's point of view. Okay? And I'm going to want some consequences to that act. Okay? Unless that person can show that their rights were at risk, okay, by my existence, I want them to feel some consequence.
Mm-hmm.
I expect that my action of just walking up somebody in a pop because I burnt my lip on the coffee,
mm-hmm.
okay, I expect that there will be some consequences to that act.
Okay.
Not the least of which every other person that saw me do it takes mm-hmm. out the gun and pops me. Okay? Because after all, I am now proven threat to just about anybody else that's walking around.
Exactly.
Okay? So I want a certain set of consequences to exist in such a way as me will decide that it's not in my best interest to risk those consequences. Okay? And while I might be wanting to shoot the person because I burnt my lip and they just happened to be there, I'm not interested in dealing with the consequences. Okay, so I want a certain amount of consequences to those unfettered, completely unfettered, free exercise of my rights. Those consequences can only be enforced in a civil society by a system of laws that create punishment or consequences, if you prefer, for those freely expressed rights expressed at a time that shouldn't have been.
According to that moral philosophy.
Well, if you want to call it a moral philosophy, I just call it enlightened self-interest.
Well,
I'm not interested in walking down the street and get popped because somebody just burned his tongue on some hot coffee.
I understand, but that's still a moral judgment.
There's no morality in my desire to live.
Okay, we aren't going to get far with this because what you perceive as an expression of rights, I perceive as a manifestation of not having a society on the one hand, or two, having such a controlling society that those actions can't happen. And we aren't going to get very far with that.
That goes to the heart of my question: what is a right and just, purpose of government?
And at least for me, the answer to that is there is none, as long as you don't mind living in anarchy.
As long as you live in an environment in which, you cannot be certain, and I mean it exactly that way,
right,
certain that every other participant holds your similar point of view. Not morals, but holds your similar point of view.
Okay.
If on our deserted island...
You work awful hard to avoid that morals word.
I do. I work very hard. I do because I try really hard to avoid it. Simply because to base it, to attribute my point of view to a system of moral beliefs means to suggest that your system of moral beliefs are as justifiable as mine.
Okay.
And my answer is they are not.
Mm-hmm.
Because, not because I think yours differs very drastically from mine, that's not true. I think yours and mine and about 250 million other people in this country our moral compass, our belief system as far as that is concerned, are very consistent. But there is a much broader world out there of which a significant portion has plopped its butt into our country that does not share that moral system. And given our way of our country and our principles and our beliefs of how this country should operate, we have to give that system of morals that we go, God, is that a lock? Bullshit. We have to give that system of morals an equivalency to our own, and I'm saying that's damn dangerous.
Oh, I don't think we have to do that at all.
And hence we get back to Detroit and Sharia law.
And I'm saying, yeah, okay, Detroit can do that. The rest of the nation will say, that's really fine, but no, you can't do that.
Ben, I'm concerned by the fact that what people are saying is, morals can be the foundation of our law, but it's only our morals that are acceptable as the foundation of our law.
Of our law.
Our law being the entire United States as it applies to everybody allowed to be in here legally.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think that's what our founders wanted.
Well, I agree with you, but
I
assume that
our founders expected that because of the world that they lived in.
Yeah.
I expected that our founders believed that because anybody coming here to this country believed in that same set of principles to begin with.
And morals, yeah.
And morals.
Yeah.
I don't think they could conceive of anybody coming to this country that didn't have that desire to live under that system of morals and principles.
And it's exactly why we have a culture war going on.
But my issue is that they created a system that, in fact, is bound in that natural law, in that system of, you know, consistent morals, because they didn't assume anybody else would come around. And, in fact, that is what's happened. And that system has to give, I believe the system has to give that other moral system at least parity in those communities that wish it to be so.
Well, you and I will differ on that. I don't think that we have to give parity to them at all.
Except for there are a lot of communities now that businesses are required, you know, to separate, you know, men and women environments.
Well,
there are places around Detroit now where businesses have to separate the men and the women.
In that case, they either have to subscribe to that belief system, or they need to be moving out.
Ooh, I don't like that.
Well, here's the practicality of it. The practicality is, you either submit yourself to that, with all that entails, or you say, you know what, I'm not going to participate in that.
And then you leave.
Yeah.
And as far as you're concerned, that's okay.
I don't think it's okay, but I think it's the reality.
My problem is I don't think that it's okay at all.
Well, I don't think it's okay either, but it's still reality.
And I'm concerned by a system that would allow it to be a reality.
Yep. You betcha.
So that's why
And that's why we have a culture war.
That's why I don't like laws having a moral foundation.
No, what you don't like is having laws that have a moral foundation that go against your morals.
I don't have any morals.
Yeah, you do.
I have rights.
No, you have morals, too.
That's your opinion.
Yeah, I know. I know. And it's okay.
That's the problem with natural law. And I came up with two particular examples that I suggested that a person that supports natural law, that given those two situations, a person would support natural law until I gave them those two situations, and then they would be quite quick to rebut the fact that they stand for moral law, natural law, in those situations.
And
here are the two situations.
Okay.
I'll read it exactly. Here, let me take two situations where I will be told natural law is preeminent, and then watch how fast the natural law will be ran away from. Protect the young. Natural law. What's the natural law on protecting the young?
I don't know. I mean, I truly don't.
Do you believe in the protecting the young, protecting the innocent?
Mine, yeah.
Yours?
Well, sure.
Anyone's?
If I know them. If they're close.
How young?
How young you got?
One day.
Yep.
1 minute.
Yep.
1 second.
Yep.
Prior to birth.
Yep.
In nature, an unhealthy or deformed animal will almost always be abandoned by its parents, mother usually, because only in a few cases does the father actually have raising responsibilities. Nature aborts offspring often in the womb, in humans too, but it is equally vicious after birth. Do you believe
I think you just conflated a few things there.
No, you're suggesting that the young should be protected. I gave you no qualifiers to it.
No, but then you qualified it by saying, gosh, in nature and in the animal world, that doesn't always work. And I'm saying, we're better than the animals.
Okay, good. That's fine. That's where I want you to go.
Yeah.
That's where I want you to go.
Okay.
Homosexuality.
Yeah.
Natural law?
Don't know. I'm guessing in some small percentage, yeah.
Okay. In nature, is every offspring intended to produce offspring of its own? No. In many species, only the pack leader is allowed to breed. In some others, sterile offspring are born to serve the larger herd. And I use herd as a, you know,
yeah,
as a catch-all.
Yeah, I know you do, but again, you're conflating the general animal kingdom with humans.
This is my situation. What do you mean by natural law? If you mean nature's law, okay, I find the problem, you know, with nature's law is that humans have a huge problem with nature law. This is what I said after those two examples.
Okay.
I said, humans use that reasoning to look at nature and say, for us, we can do better. We can give the bottom 10%, the bottom 15%, a chance to breed and multiply. We can give the deformed, the less than perfect, strong and healthy, a chance at life. We can take one member and do unnatural things like heart transplants, kidney and liver transplants, and allow them to live longer at a great cost to society. If people want the justice of nature, they had better hope their neighbor is not stronger, faster, smarter, and less willing to share territory. Natural law is a mean, vicious, uncaring, ruthless bitch that does not bow to justice or fairness. If you take natural law to be nature's law. Now, if you mean nature's law or natural law equals God's law, we got a whole different kettle of fish, and I'm not even going to go there. Okay. But if we're talking about nature's law, in what happens out there in nature, okay, the biological normalcy of a species, if that's what you want to take as a foundational principle of our founding in this country, I don't think you want to go there. I don't think any caring human being wants to go there.
Mm-hmm.
We don't act like the animals in nature because, as you suggest, we're not animals. Too many are quick to point out that we are just the top of the food chain animal, you know, but I take that as a whole lot of shit, mainly because one of the things that they say, Cicero and Aristotle's, is that we are a reasoning, you know, species. We have the capacity to reason. We have the capacity to say, you know, nature sucks, and we're going to do something different because we can. Because as humans, we can look at nature and go, you know, that's fine for the mindless animals, but we're not mindless, so we're going to change things just a little bit to improve the species, to be better than the animal species, to be better than nature's law. And that's where I went with that discussion and that argument. Now, I could be way off base because maybe that's not what natural law, what nature's law, what nature's God means to them. But I think it is.
Well, I don't know.
And I mean, I say that truly. I truly do not know. My guess is that you would get a kickback on that.
I'm hoping so.
Well, yeah. In terms of no, we're talking about natural law, not nature's law.
Right. I'm looking to be. You know, I'm looking for. You know, I took the words as they were given.
Mm-hmm.
You know that
mm-hmm.
that tends to be the way I approach things.
Sure.
And you know, said, you know, is this in fact what you mean by that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I could be wrong.
Sure.
I could be misinterpreting it, and mm-hmm. I'm willing to be corrected on that misinterpretation. but you know, on its face, that's kind of where I think they were going, and if it is, then of course I have a problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think most people would. Put into that point of view, I think most people would.
Mm-hmm. Because
mm-hmm. we're better than animals. We are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Human reasoning yeah. allows us to take nature and say, yeah, no.
Yeah, not for us.
Yeah. We're going to give Victoria a new pancreas.
Yeah.
Or a new vitreous tumor, or a new
mm-hmm.
heart, or a new
yeah.
kidney.
Or
you
whatever.
Know, we're going to take the Down syndrome kid who has, you know, not a hope in hell
mm-hmm.
of functioning in society without a society that's willing to cut him just a little slack.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot. Some
mm-hmm.
of them are high-functioning
yeah.
and perfectly acceptable.
But
yeah. we're not going to say, Down syndrome, put that kid out there in the street, let it die, because, you know, it's not perfect.
Right. Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
we're not animals. We are
yep.
going to take, you know, all that we're presented with and try and make it better. I think that's a great thing. I think
mm-hmm.
it's a wonderful point of view. I
mm-hmm.
just don't want people to start going, well, it's not natural. Yeah, thank God.
Yeah, really.
You know, let me tell you, you don't want nature's rules. You want nature's rules, I'll give you nature's rules.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then Miss Tracy Coyle's amoral point of view
mm-hmm.
okay, becomes the norm.
Mm.
Right? If nature is the rule, then Tracy's amoralism becomes normal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, biggest, baddest wins.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I may not be the biggest, baddest.
Yeah, right.
But I'm going to get through a whole shitload of people before finding one.
Exactly. 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 Yeah. Okay, so. Damn it. Okay. You know, if it comes down to anarchy or some reasonable limitation on rights, then, you know, I'm going to vote for some reasonable limitation. The problem with that is everybody's definition of reasonable differs.
Yeah. That's why I'm not interested in reasonable or moral.
Well,
you
but then
right.
if the other alternative is anarchy, then that doesn't work either.
Well, you're limiting it to that point of view.
Well, I'm just saying, tell me a different way.
Well, I'm working on it.
Okay.
That's all I can say. I'm working on it.
I'm working.
All right, we're gonna lose our feed here in a few minutes.
Yeah, we are.
We used up our 45 minutes.
Yep.
Bill, thank you. I appreciate it. You know,
you bet.
We got a chance to go into this thing. We'll find out what happens when I get responses back from this. See what happens.
Super. I'm gonna be interested in hearing them.
Otherwise, I will see you next week.
You betcha.
You know, and
yep.
everyone else that are listening, thanks.
Yep.
We'll talk to you next week.
Have a good one.
Bye, Bill.
Bye.